Happy New Year! Welcome to Raising a Pro. I'm Annie Apple, journalist and NFL mom to my son, Eli Apple. If you're listening to this, that means we survived 2020. Woohoo! 2020 was definitely a hard year. So much public and private traumas, from the pandemic and the lives lost to the racial uprising. 2020 was definitely an insufferable year. But with it came the difficult conversations we need to have and important systemic changes we need to see. Today's show is a little different from the norm, but the mission is still the same. Exploring the journey of an accomplished trailblazer and gaining insights and wisdom into her process. This is truly an empowering episode to help us kick off the new year. Welcome the ultimate team player, Amy Trask. I'm so excited. I'm like a kid in a candy store because I actually love this woman so much. But let me just tell you a little bit about her. We are so blessed to be joined by Amy Trask. She's a sports analyst for CBS. She's also a lawyer, and she's the author of the book that I've been reading, and I recommend everybody read it if you love football. The book is called You Negotiate Like a Girl, Reflections on a Career in the National Football League. She's the current chairwoman of the board of the Big 3-on-3 Basketball League. And in 1997, Amy became the first female CEO in NFL history with the Oakland Raiders. Welcome, Amy Trask. But first, most important question. Amy, the first woman CEO in NFL history, how did you, as a young girl, dream of doing something that had never been done before?
Before I jump into that, I want to let you know that it is an absolute thrill for me to be joining you on your podcast. I am a tremendous, tremendous fan of your work, a tremendous fan of yours, and I am delighted that we team up to represent the dogs on the internet.
Yes, let me let everybody know about that. Amy and I are superheroes for dogs on the internet and Twitter. We have this thing what we call a pro bono, where if there is a dog that's been denied access to the couch in a house, or a dog who's been blamed of tearing things up with no video evidence, we defend the dogs. And it's my favorite thing about Twitter.
You're absolutely right. It is one of the fun parts about Twitter. Now, to answer your question, I never dreamt of it, Annie. I never, ever, ever dreamt of it. I was not one of those kids coming into college from high school or out of college that had a grand plan or a sort of a vision of where I would end up. In fact, during my career with the Raiders, at one point, someone for whom I have tremendous, tremendous respect and who's very, very much a part of my life said to me, "You know, Aim, you need to have a 5-year plan." And I looked at him and I said, I don't want a 5-year plan. I don't have a 5-year plan. I don't need a 5-year plan. And oh, by the way, that whole 5-year plan, that thing didn't work out so well for the Russians. So, you know, I'm not having a 5-year plan. And when I joined the Raiders, I joined as an intern. And then when I was ultimately given a full-time position, if I had been told that my responsibility was picking up the scrunched up cups on the sideline and that was it, I would have been thrilled to do that because I was so excited to be part of the team, part of the organization, that what I was doing to contribute didn't matter to me as much as the fact that I got to contribute.
But you know what I love about that story is the fact that, you know, you started law school and you just called them up like, "Hey, I want to intern. You know, I'm going to try that. Like, if I see a hot guy online, I'm just going to call him up like, hey, by the way, would you like to go out? I know I'm taking your career thing, but it's inspired me to just like go and do that cold call. It just might work out."
Well, I do. I'm going to say a very serious answer and then sort of a serious, silly answer. The serious answer is, why not? Why not try? If you want something, go after it and go after it and get it. But now, as to your plan, Annie, remember, there are some serial killers on the internet.
There really are
some creepy people. So you be very, very, very careful. But all sort of dating and silliness aside, why not try? What's the worst that can happen if someone in school contacts a business and says, "I'd like to work as an intern"? The worst thing that's going to happen is you're going to be told no. And it might, in fact, open the world up for you. And, you know, before we go any further, I have to, of course, note that I shall forever, ever appreciate and thank Well, I'll appreciate forever. I'm getting a little choked up as I say this. I apologize, but I shall always and forever appreciate the opportunity Al Davis afforded me. And I shall forever thank him for that, even though he's no longer here to hear my thanks. Because when I was brought into the Raiders, that was the early part of the mid-80s. And the conversations we're having now about women in sports, those weren't even on the radar screen back then. I am sure so many Annie Apple fans and Annie Apple podcast listeners weren't even born then. That was a long time ago. Yet this was a man who hired without regard to race, gender, ethnicity, or any other individuality, which had no bearing whatsoever on whether one can do a job.
You know, one thing I didn't know this until I read your book, that Al Davis was the only owner that was also an assistant coach, a head coach, a commissioner, and owner. Like, that's phenomenal, just having the information and insight on every aspect of the game and the league.
It's a great point, and it differentiated him, as you said, from many, many owners who, you know, look, during, I was in the league for almost 30 years, and I saw the price of franchises grow exponentially, and you had people coming in to buy them who had absolutely no experience in football. And fair enough, you know, someone with a lot of money can always buy a business. But Al worked his way up in that business from the ground, and so your point is very well taken. And of course, he also did what so many others didn't even think about doing back then, which is hiring, as I suggested he did.
And you know, I want to get to something you it's in your book, but you also tweeted this recently where you said that the greatest compliment you've ever gotten was when Al was like, you know, Amy is not, you know, she's not a girl or she's not a woman.
Yeah.
You know, and when we talk about gender. So I want to ask this because my thing is, I've always seen, even when people say, I don't see gender or I don't see race. And I'm always like, well, maybe you should see it. Because, and I also believe if people really didn't see gender, there'll be women all over the league. If people didn't see race, there'll be people of color, black people who are in positions of authority all over the league. So is the problem not just we don't see gender, but how we see gender? And why do you think that gender is looked at as a liability and not an asset?
Our differences, our individualities should be viewed as assets. In my view, any business, every business, whether sports or otherwise, is better with a vast, diverse staff of employees, you know, however it's crafted, whether it's a team, whether it's a any kind of business, any kind of business is better off with all sorts of people working for it because it makes the business better and stronger. You know, look, if there were such a thing as business Darwinism, and I think there should be, and maybe over time there will be, but if there's business Darwinism, businesses which don't hire without regard to those individualities, race, gender, ethnicity, none of which have any bearing on whether one can do a job, should by definition fail, because those businesses are excluding tremendously qualified people that can help the business be better. And you're absolutely right, Annie. That was, I think, the biggest business compliment, certainly, you know, if not the biggest, probably the biggest or the one of the biggest compliments ever paid. The context was we were in a meeting and Al was going on about how he would never swear in front of women. And I'm looking at him like, are you kidding me?
Amy's not a woman.
Right. And then he said, and I would never swear at a woman. And that, you know, I threw my pen in the air. It flipped out of my hand. And he said, oh, Amy, I swear at Amy, but I don't consider her a woman. And I think that was the highest compliment he could have paid me. He didn't think about my gender. He thought about whether I did my job.
You know, one thing else I loved about the book, because it just is so you and it's why I love you so much. There's a part where you were like the first time, I think it was 1990, you were going away with the team. You're traveling with the team. And so you wanted to just be as low key as possible. You didn't want to bring any attention to yourself. I'm just going to pretend that they're not even going to know I'm here. And then you're going through the metal detector the wire in your bra goes off.
I did, Annie. I'm laughing and sort of laugh.
I laughed my ass off with that one.
It was the first time a woman, other than a woman related to the team owner or related to the head coach, had ever traveled with the team. And otherwise, it was the first time a woman on staff had ever traveled with the team. And I made this commitment to myself. I am going to be low key. No one's even going to know I'm there. I'm just going to get on that plane, work the whole way, go in my hotel room and not come out till Sunday and go to the game. And, you know, here we are. For all your listeners, I'll tell you right now, I was wearing an underwire bra. And I got to the airport like a little bit ahead so I could zip through security and just keep my low profile approach. And the underwire set the metal detector off. And they're like, I'm hurry, hurry, hurry. Cause I see the whole team coming up behind me. I'm like, hurry, 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 hurry. And it was not low key, but we all laughed about it.
You know what? And there was another part where you talked about you guys were on the tarmac, another incident, you know, years later, and it was taking forever. So you kind of got out and was like, hey, let's get this going. You literally asserted your voice and your power, not even trying to be powerful, but just saying, hey, let's get us out of here. And I remember that stuck with me because, you know, some of your colleagues were like, okay, well, who are you to, you know, that's not your job. You know, we're supposed to take care of that. But it's such a tightrope that women, we walk, right? Where we're like, okay, when should I assert myself? When should I not? It's like work on top of the work. What did you learn from that whole incident?
Well, and I don't know that it was entirely gender related, because I will add that it was very, very, very early in my career. So maybe some of the pushback was gender related. I don't know. Let's assume it was. But I think a lot of the pushback was also like, who's this kid? She just joined us as a full-time staff member. And she's like pushing her way up and asserting herself and saying, get us off this. I mean, I remember I was screaming, get us off this plane. And because nobody else was taking any action. We were on the plane. They didn't have the stairs to come meet us on the tarmac. We're standing there and nobody was doing anything. So that's just me. I just walked up to the door of the plane. And of course, there's no stairs there. So I'm looking down, leaning, hoping I don't fall out. And I just screamed, get us off this plane. And I remember after the fact, looking at Al, who, you know, he just had this grin on his face, like, look what she just did. Because they did wheel those stairs over because they thought some crazy lady was having a meltdown. But it did, you know, a lot of people, there were colleagues who, I think resented is a good word, but were bothered that I took an assertive role in an area that, you know, I wasn't involved. But nobody else was doing anything. And that's just me. And I did it. And such is life.
And what I love about it, you wrote in the book that some of the players came up to you and they were like, they respected that, right? They respected that because, I mean, we should just voice, you know, there's no like, oh, can I speak? Can I not speak? It's like, okay, let me be part of the voice. Can I at least be part of the voice?
Well, they got, yeah, they did. They're like, she got us off the plane. She got us off the plane. And, you know, I will say that over the course of my career, and, you know, the example you just used is a perfect way to make this point. I never experienced any gender-related pushback or bias whatsoever from any player ever, because it was my perception that players wanted you to be, if you were a teammate, and if you contributed and you helped make their jobs easier, their jobs better, if you helped make the team better, well, then you were a good teammate. And in that instance, I got us off the plane.
And you know, if I could add this, also being an NFL mom and doing this podcast, we've interviewed many NFL moms. What people don't understand is these young men come through the door respecting the power, intellect, and strength and courage of women, because the women in their lives are the ones who really got them on the path to where they are. Do you know what I mean? It's almost like once you become part of the team, or once you become part of, unfortunately, the culture where there is like pushback, or, you know, we don't want women here, or we don't regard women. Players as a whole, they're used to it because your mom is your first coach, your first trainer, your first nutritionist, you know, the whole nine. So I think they welcome that.
That's a great point, and one I had never reflected on. And certainly, you know, you are held up by so many as an example of just that, as the strong, powerful mom that you are.
I'm a little taller than you. I'm 5'1", but, you know.
And oh, no, friend. Whoa.
What?
Let's just stop dead in our tracks right now, because I am 5'3".
I don't know, Amy. We met in person and I don't know what heel you're wearing or what hill you were standing on, but I am taller than you. I don't care what your driver's license say about your height.
You know, I don't care what it says about my weight either, by the way. You know, here's the deal. We will get together again when the world returns to some sort of normal and we will measure.
And I will come up on top.
We'll see about that.
Before we continue with Amy, I want to say a big thank you to HelloFresh for sponsoring this episode of Raising a Pro. And with HelloFresh, you can save both time and money this new year. HelloFresh delivers pre-measured ingredients and seasonal recipes right to your door, taking the stress out of home cooking. And that's why they're America's number one meal kit. Not only is it 46% cheaper than shopping at your local grocery store, you don't even have to leave your house to do it. And if your spare time is already limited, don't worry, we got you covered. HelloFresh's new Easy Eats options are perfect for you. They're oven ready and 10 to 20 minute meals are a breeze to follow. And so filling. I love my food and honestly, I can't pick a fault with their meals. I really can't. You may have heard me talk about Green Chef in previous episodes. Well, guess what? Green Chef is now owned by HelloFresh. And I love switching it up between the two brands and exploring all their recipes. And better yet, you get to enjoy both brands at a discount with me. Go to HelloFresh.com/10Wrap and use code 10Wrap. That's the numbers 10 and R-A-P for 10 free meals, including free shipping. What I love most about when I was reading about you is like, you were this fireball growing up, right? You talked back. I love when you wrote about you just stayed in the corner. You were always the kid in the corner. And you always had that strength where you just, you pushed, like you were your own person. And I say this because so many women, especially women of your generation, many of them really didn't do that. And going from this fireball you were to now with the Raiders where you're like looking to like, okay, how can I fit in? Like, how did you make that mental adjustment? Or did you just learn how to exert when you needed to exert?
There really wasn't an adjustment. And one of the reasons I fell in love with the Raiders, and I'll back up and say that I went to college at Cal Berkeley. And at the time the Raiders were in Oakland, just down the road. And I was a football fan well before I went to college. I'd been a football fan for years and years and years and years. But I fell in love with the Raiders when I was at Berkeley. Because when I was in kindergarten, and you nailed it, I spent every day standing in the corner. It's a miracle I'm not cross-eyed. But I was labeled a behavior problem. And that label, you know, my parents were told she's a behavior problem. You know, my sixth grade teacher told my mom I'd never make it to college. And that label behavior problem stuck with me all the way through high school. And frankly, there's a lot of people who think it still applies. But what I loved, one of the things I fell in love with about the Raiders and about the way Al owned and ran that team is you could be a behavior problem. Other teams could label you a behavior problem and Al didn't care. Other teams could get rid of you and Al would give you a second chance and a third chance or maybe a fourth chance. And I was that kid who needed second chances and third chances. So I just felt an immediate affinity for, wow, this team embraces behavior problems. This team doesn't care if you conform. You know, you'd see all that old footage of players on the road to play a game. You know, either they were traveling from, see them getting on their plane to board their plane or getting off the bus to go into the stadium on the road. And they were all wearing suits and ties. And then you'd see the footage of the Raiders and they are looking like, you know, a motorcycle gang just dropped them off. And I love that. So there was no adjustment. And the best advice I ever got in my whole life was from my mom, who told me from the time I was a little kid, to thine own self be true. So, you know, when I joined the Raiders, I was just me, but I was joining an organization that allowed me to be me. And frankly, I think me being me meshed very well with Al.
You know, and it really did, because there were times where you were able to just voice your counter, you know, even if you didn't agree. What I love most, like, you did make yourself heard, but you chose, you know, people say pick your battles, right? One thing I learned from you is like, you were very skilled at doing that. And in the way you did that, what advice can you give to women who are looking to work in sports at such a high level?
The biggest misconception about Al is that he wouldn't tolerate disagreement, or he wouldn't tolerate those who disagreed with him. Because if that were the case, I would have been fired roughly 2 weeks into my job. He walked into an office. I was sitting there with a coworker, and he lit into this coworker like nothing I had ever seen. It was like a velociraptor, how I would imagine a velociraptor would tear into flesh. And after listening for a few minutes, I realized Al was wrong. I said, "Excuse me, you're wrong." And his head spun around. I will forever remember the expression on his face. You know, here I'd been there 2 weeks roughly. And I said, "Look, if the facts upon which you were basing your conclusion were accurate, your conclusion would be fair. But you are basing your entire conclusion on inaccurate information, inaccurate facts. So you're wrong." So he yelled and I yelled and he yelled and I don't have a dainty voice under the best of circumstances. And I didn't know it at the time, but people were gathering in the hallway outside the office and listening. And one woman even grabbed cartons because she thought she'd have to help me pack my boxes, you know, with my stuff to get out. But after a pretty long argument, Al looked at me and said, "Oh, okay. All right. I gotcha. I got it. I understand. I got it." And we went, and we moved right on. And that set the tone for our working relationship for almost 30 years. And so to answer your question about advice I would give, the one thing I will note is this. When you want to disagree with someone, come armed with information. Don't disagree just to be disagreeable or just for the sake of disagreeing. Have your facts, have your data. Come armed with an argument. And I will tell you, over those 30 years, I disagreed with Al more than I agreed with him. But I always came with data. And I also recognized at the end of the day, he owned the business. I didn't. So it was my job to try to persuade him to change his mind. If I couldn't, I had to accept that his decision was the final decision. And I then had to work to implement it as best I could, because that was my responsibility.
You said in the book also, you said, and I'm quoting you, "Do your job, work hard, work harder than you ever thought possible, then work harder," end quote. And I read that, and I'm doing anything requires a certain trust level, right? Knowing that if I work hard, I know I'll be rewarded. But we know that the NFL is not a merit-based business. It's a production wins and losses. You can be the first one in and last one out, but when free agency come, you may be the first to go. You know, for you to work hard, there has to be trust. So how can we kind of match that trust with the hard work? Or does that even matter?
Well, I guess I would answer that in reverse. You know, recognizing what you're saying about rosters and free agency and cuts and things like that, that's different than things are in the front office, of course. But I guess the way I'd answer your question is, putting that aside for the moment, hard work isn't always going to be the answer, but without hard work, you're not going to find the answer. In other words, I had kids come into my office, and I call them kids because they were really, really, really young, fresh out of school. It could have been their first job, maybe their second job. And they'd walk into my office and they'd say to me, "How do we get a job like yours? How do we get on a career trajectory so we can end up in a position like yours?" And I would say to them, "Do you notice when you come in the morning, my car's already here?" And kind of got a blank look. And I'd say, "And do you notice when you leave at night, my car is still here?" So I recognize what you're saying, Annie, as relates to rosters, of course. And I also recognize that you're right. Hard work is not always going to be the answer. But I do believe without hard work, you're not going to get to the right answer.
And I think also it's important to add that when you're working hard, it's not always about the reward. It's about you loving what you're doing and want to get better at it. So even if you're not appreciated there, nobody can take that hard work and what you've learned from you. And you can take that to the next place.
Beautifully stated.
You know, when I look at your career, and all I can think about you coming in there in law school in 1982, I have to ask, how did you think you evolved from the moment you walked through the door as an intern to the moment you left as CEO in 2013? What was your evolution like, you know, versus when you came in? What did you think? And by the time you were done, nearly 30 years later, how have you evolved?
Well, to put it as simply as I can, I grew up. I not only grew up on the job, I grew up, period. In other words, a lot of people grow on a job. They learn, they evolve, they get better, they improve. I had to grow up as a person as well. And I made a lot of mistakes as I did. I mean, when you start a job in your early 20s and you're there a long time, you're gonna look back on things you did in the beginning and think, oh, I did what? So one of the things I learned and I embraced as I went and I communicated as strongly as I could to everyone on staff, it's okay to make a mistake. I mean, look, I had the privilege of flying in an Air Force fighter jet. I didn't fly it, actually, just to be clear. I was in the back seat. And I'm being silly because, of course, I didn't fly it. But if the pilot, when we were going almost 500 miles an hour and we were upside down, if he screamed out, oh, no, I made a mistake, okay, that could be a real problem.
I would have given him directions. I know how to navigate the clouds. Past the fourth cloud, make a left at the smaller clouds, and you'll see a red light.
Well,
at the seventh cloud.
You would have been better than I. But, you know, for the most part in business, problems can either be fixed or remedied. Maybe they cost you some money, but you can generally fix problems. You can fix mistakes, I should say. So I guess one of the things I learned very quickly was it's okay to make a mistake. And what I told staff regularly is I'm going to make mistakes. And when I do, I'm going to ask you to help me fix them. And I want you to know, I know you're going to make mistakes. And what I want you to do when you make a mistake is come to me and say, I made a mistake. Because you know what? I'm going to help you fix the mistakes you make, just like I'm counting on you to help me fix my mistakes. And the bigger my mistake was, Annie, the more ice cream I would have in the conference room when I called them together to help me fix it. But that's one thing I learned. I grew up on the job. I made mistakes as I did. I grew up as a person, I should say, while on the job. I made mistakes as I did. But I learned it's okay to make mistakes.
And I think the saddest part, especially for, you know, when I started my career off in television news, as a Black woman, I was always one of just a few or the only one. And the biggest fear that you have is like, you can't make a mistake. I think that was the one thing where you always felt like, I always felt like I didn't have that space and that room to nurture, you know what I mean? To grow, because there's certain kind of trust level where we're able to just thrive when we have a space where we know, you know what, I can make a mistake and grow from it. But that's one thing when I look back over my career, honestly, I never felt I had. Like you couldn't make a mistake.
Well, Annie, boy, oh boy, oh boy, I am so glad you referenced that, because I understand that not everybody worked in an environment like I did, where I was setting the environment that it's okay to make a mistake. Other people, and you just gave a perfect example, you had so much pressure on your shoulders and such a sense of, I just can't mess this up. And you may not have worked in an environment where you understood, go ahead and make a mistake. So, you know, whether the pressure was external, internal, some of both, I have so much respect for what you just said and what you experienced because of that burden that you had to not make a mistake. And that's one of the things I tried to do when leading a staff, was let everyone on that staff know, go ahead, you can make a mistake. I think that's important.
And that is such powerful leadership. I always say leadership is, you know, vulnerability is a hallmark of leadership. And I think if everyone had that space, number one, it would just take that pressure off and it really will make you thrive at your job. I know I asked this question a few minutes ago, but I want to flip it in another way as we come. I know we have limited time with you because you are a very busy woman and you need to save the world.
And I'm parked illegally.
That too. But I have to say, how should parents, right, prepare their daughters to work in sports? Because I think that the training maybe has to start when you're younger. If you have a daughter who wants to work in a predominantly male field, what can parents start to do now? Because I know one thing parents always do is like, especially for girls, you have to be proper, you have to be quiet, not talk. So how can we unlearn some of those? And what are some things that parents can do in preparing their girls to work in sports?
I was so fortunate in that regard. Both my parents, my mom and my dad, raised all of us without regard to gender in terms of what we could accomplish intellectually or professionally.
And Amy, I got to add this in there, right? I got to add this to interrupt you real quickly. There's one part in your book where someone, I forgot who, I don't know if it's Jean Upshur, somebody went to your dad and was like, do you know she cursed? He's like, listen, that's Amy. You know what I mean? Like, it's almost like your father, he just gave you the freedom to just be you.
It was Lincoln Kennedy. And oh my gosh, Annie, I'm smiling ear to ear. Lincoln didn't like how much I cussed. So one day after a game, I was meeting my parents where, you know, you'd walk, and you know this well, how you walk out the tunnel where the players come out of the locker room. And I was walking out of the tunnel and my parents were there. And Lincoln strode over to my mom and dad and said, "Can you help me with this? I've really got to help. We got to put a handle on her cussing." And my dad just looked at Lincoln and started laughing and said, "Good luck, Lincoln. We haven't been able to fix it." But, you know, again, I'm going to come back to that advice my mom gave me, which, by the way, I will admit, I was almost out of college before I learned that that was a quote from a Shakespeare play. It was from Hamlet. I thought my mom invented it, but she didn't. "To thine own self be true." Everybody has to find their own way. What works for one person doesn't necessarily work for another. So my number one piece of advice to people trying to do anything is do it in a manner that is true to yourself. Don't try to be something you're not. My biggest blunders, my biggest missteps, my biggest regrets have all been when I haven't been true to myself, when I have tried to be something I'm not.
What would you have demanded now that you didn't demand then?
Nothing.
Really?
I can't think of anything.
Really?
I can't think of a thing.
Amy's one of the most humble people you will ever meet. She's very, very chill and low-key. And I want her to tell us 5 fantastic Amy Trex facts. Like, this is your opportunity to big yourself up. What are, like, some of the great things about Amy? Because sometimes as women, we feel like, oh, I have to be humble. I can't say. I think you're a badass. So you got to tell us 5 badass things about Amy.
Oh, man. Annie, you are so good at this. And I don't even think I have an answer. Okay, I will tell you. One thing is,
tell them how good you are, Amy. Let them know. Do I need to give you a beat?
No, I will say that I try to do all I can to help everyone with whom I work or interact in a non-work setting be the best that they can be. I really do believe in the adage, it takes a village. And I try to do whatever I can within my various villages to encourage others to be the best they can be. I'll give you one more. I'm very direct. Now, some people say, Amy, you are direct to a fault. You are like a damn bull in a china shop. You are so direct. Well, you know what? I think being direct is a good thing. I really do. I think that we'd all be a lot better off if we were direct with one another. Oh, I'll give you one final thing. I believe in civil discourse. I believe we can all disagree with one another, but we can do so agreeably. We can exchange thoughts in a reasoned and reasonable manner, and we can disagree strongly and firmly and ardently, but we can do so in a civil manner. And if we could do that throughout this world, we could solve a lot of problems together.
Amen to that. And in closing, one of my dreams for you, and I hope, is I would love to see you as a play-by-play announcer. I we don't have one. And I have to ask, why is the NFL so slow to get a woman GM and to get a woman in the booth?
Annie, I have to tell you something. When I left my job with the Raiders, I said to my husband as I was making the decision, I was like, you know, the Shakespearean, to be or not to be, should I stay or should I go? Should I stay or should I go? And I told my husband, until I made that decision, I wasn't going to be able to decide what was next. So I made the decision to leave and, you know, woke up the next morning. I looked at him and I said, I'm a blight on humanity. I have nothing to do. And that week, I had a dream that I was hired to be in the broadcast booth for a network. I was the color commentator. And so it was the first series of the first game in which I was in the booth. And I said, who the F called that effing play? That is the dumbest effing. I mean, that was my dream. And I was fired after one series. So I woke up and I'm like, I guess that's not in the cards for me, because I just went on a swearing rant in the booth in my dream. So I don't know that I'm cut out for that.
Really? I would love to see it, because I mean, no one knows the game better, male or female. And it's needed.
I'd really have to curb the cussing. I'd have to get to work on that.
I think you can do that. I think anytime you can make it on Twitter without cussing one person out, I think you can definitely, definitely do that. Why do you think the NFL is so slow when it comes to women in positions of power, even African-Americans in position of power? You've been one of the few, you know, and so you've had insight and you've been looking on the outside. What do you think the greatest problem is, and how can we remedy that?
I don't think there's any one answer for every single team. I think that the NFL is not one entity. It's 32 individual clubs, which comprise the league is nothing more than association of those 32 clubs. So I think the answer is, with respect to some of those clubs, a pretty ugly answer. I think with other clubs, it's not as troubling an answer. And what's nice to see now is that the pipeline is being opened. Many teams, the San Francisco 49ers have opened the pipeline. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers have done so. And so, you know, the more and more women that are in introductory positions, the more we'll see women in other positions.
A mutual friend of ours, Jim Trotter, did an article a few months ago where he did a survey with various NFL players, a couple from each team, and he asked them, what is the most important quality that you think a coach should have? And 9 out of 10, that the majority of them said, you know, what's lacking is interpersonal communication skills. And when I look back, which you mentioned, your four words, your fundamentally profound four words are communicate, cooperate, collaborate, and coordinate. And as a mom of an NFL player, interpersonal communication skills is so important, but it seems so lacking in this league. Is that something that is per team, or is just the culture of the business that really doesn't really invest in the player? So I guess interpersonal communication skills are not one of those things that are high up.
I don't think it's unique to the league. Okay. And thank you for noting those words, communicate, cooperate, collaborate, coordinate. Those are the four most important words in every business. And it certainly is lacking in a lot of teams, but I think it's lacking in a lot of businesses as a whole. And by the way, I love that we both love Jim Trotter.
I adore him.
Jim Trotter. Yeah, I do. I adore him with one footnote. The man has something against sprinkles. And so when you go out to ice cream with Jim, he just, like, if you want sprinkles on a Sunday and you want to share with him, he makes you put the sprinkles off to one side. So his sprinkle issues aside, and in all sincerity, I adore him. And I look forward to the moment when the three of us can get together.
That would be awesome. I'm team no sprinkles because it just interrupts my ice cream flow. I'm sorry.
Oh, you know what? Fair enough. When we go out, you and Jim can have it without the sprinkles. I'll eat all the sprinkles. I got this handled.
So what's next for you?
Well, right now I'm thrilled doing what I'm doing. I am absolutely thrilled with my work for CBS Sports. I'm having a blast. And, you know, we'll see what happens next with the big three. We had to cancel our season because of the pandemic. We could not put our coaches or players at risk. And I'm just having a lot of fun doing everything I'm doing. So, Annie, I will wrap it up with this. I still do not have a 5-year plan.
That's it. That's it. Amy, I appreciate you from the bottom of my heart. And every time I interact with you, I get smarter. And I definitely have gotten smarter today. So thank you very much.
Well, Annie, I feel the same way. This has been an absolute honor for me and a pleasure. And you are so, so good at this. There's a lot of news organizations that could use you right now.
Oh, you see, Jesus loves me and Amy likes me. I don't need anybody or anything else. Thank you, Amy. Appreciate that a lot. This conversation was so powerful for me. Amy dropped so much wisdom and gems. This one touched me deeply when I shared my personal experience of never feeling supported at work as a young Black female journalist in television news. I never felt I had a safe space to grow, and I always felt like I was never able to make a mistake.
Boy, oh boy, oh boy, I am so glad you referenced that, because I understand that not everybody worked in an environment like I did, where I was setting the environment that it's okay to make a mistake. Other people, and you just gave a perfect example, you had so much pressure on your shoulders and such a sense of, I just can't mess this up. I have so much respect for what you just said and what you experienced because of that burden that you had to not make a mistake.
I really appreciate the affirmations Amy provided me. It was a powerful healing moment. In Amy's voice, I felt heard. My experiences and my emotions felt validated. Her empathy helped me to let go of a lot of corporate racism and hurt. For that, I truly appreciate her. This episode meant more to me than I think she will ever know. Which leads me to today's Annie's Clapback. It's so important to be a safe space for others to thrive, not just survive. Whether at home or at work, we're all going to make mistakes. So let's give each other some grace and care, realizing that we each bring something unique and special that needs to be nurtured and celebrated. That's how we win in business and in life. Thank you all for listening. Raising a Pro is part of Audio Boom Originals Network. And if you haven't already, make sure you rate and review on Apple Podcasts. Follow us on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts so you don't miss an episode. I'll be back next week with another intimate glimpse beyond the gridiron. Once again, happy, healthy, prosperous New Year. See you next time, family.